Hello and welcome to Irreverent Testimony, the political podcast by and for millennial and Gen Xer types from a left-leaning perspective. Tonight is the night of February the 13th, 2016, and we watched the GOP debate and we're still digesting the news that Justice Antonin Scalia passed away early this morning in Texas, so we are obviously going to tell you all about that. I'm Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And before we get into the Scalia stuff, let me say, no, I'm not going to tap dance on the guy's grave. That's just not my style. I understand some of my liberal friends, their propensity to want to do that. That's your jam. That's fine. It's not mine. It's just not how I roll. The guy had a family. The guy had close people, friends to, you know, that's the most important thing. The guy, you know, had kids and grandkids and
bunch of them.
A spouse and, you know, so.
So his death is tragic for them. I will say that.
He was a human being. Let me put
absolutely,
it that way.
Okay, of course.
And yes, he had.
He was also a public figure.
He's a public figure.
In public life, I am glad that he is no longer on the Supreme Court. I don't wish him dead. I'm not happy he's dead. But I am happy that he will no longer be making decisions for the highest court of the land.
Oh, let me be clear. I agree with 10 to 15% of his decisions, maybe, in certain circumstances. And
that's really generous.
And no, it's accurate, I think. And you know, obviously, I virulently disagreed with, and I thought a lot of his decisions were really actually terrible for things I care about deeply, like minority rights and women's rights,
voting rights, reproductive rights,
and
gay marriage.
Yeah, you name it.
I'm
not a fan of the guy, so don't get me wrong. But just as a human being, I'm not gonna make light of him passing away. So with that said, now a lot of our friends, and certainly we want to know, what the hell does this mean? What happens now?
Yeah.
Well, we're going to give you the Reader's Digest version the best
yeah.
we can.
And just full disclosure, it's kind of, I don't have a lot of notes tonight, you guys. We watched
what?
The debate. And
you're winging it?
I am. I'm winging it
we're
a little bit.
We're doing it live like O'Reilly?
Fuck it. We'll do it live. Yeah. I just... yeah, I'm just doing it because
wow.
lots of stuff's going on. And we watched a debate, and instead of copiously taking notes, I just sort of laid around and giggled. So
it was quite a spectacle.
It was.
We'll get to that.
Yeah.
But first things first, Scalia.
What do you want to do? Scalia first. Yeah. All right. So, okay. Antonin Scalia was the longest serving member of the court. Not the oldest, but longest serving.
Yeah, confirmed in 1986 under
Reagan.
The second year of Reagan's second term, I want to say.
Yep. Yeah, must have been, right? 86?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah. Real. So, okay. Let me just, from a nonpartisan perspective, tell you a little bit about Scalia. So the Constitution can be viewed in a couple of different ways from legal scholars. One is that it's a living, breathing document, right? So the shit that our founding fathers wrote in 1789, that's a long time ago. And gosh, kind of a lot's happened since then.
Yeah, let me add, when it was written, women did not have the right to vote. African Americans did not have the right
to
vote.
They were three-fifths of a person.
They were three-fifths of a person.
Most of our founding fathers were slave owners.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there was no... telephone communication, much less internet, much less cell phones, smartphones, much less really anything, even resembling the current society that we live in. And so the constitutional scholars that I find myself most closely associated with from an ideological perspective and from a law perspective tend to view the document in this way, that when we talk about the basic principles of the Constitution...
That it's a framework, not an
yeah,
evangelical
that it,
Bible.
That it's a framework, that we should look at it and say, what did they intend and what can we extrapolate from that ideal that would fit this current construct? So, like, I remember when I was studying poli-sci at school, we were talking about a Supreme Court case having to do with the FAA, which is airlines.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing about airplanes in the Constitution. There just isn't, because they didn't fucking exist.
If anybody would have written anything, it might have been Franklin, but, you know.
I mean, so for me, that's how I sort of view the Constitution, is as a framework of ideals that we should extrapolate upon and sort of try to use to look at what we're doing now and do the best we can. So
yeah.
That's the opposite of Scalia. People will call him, you'll hear this a lot in the news, an originalist.
Yeah.
And what that means is really what it sounds like. He looks at the Constitution and regards it as a document that should be read verbatim. So if you follow religion at all, particularly Christianity, or I guess Islam right now, there are people who view the Bible as something that should be followed in the same way that I view the Constitution, sort of.
A book of
parables.
There's
some really good morals in
here. Morality stories.
Yeah, and we should really look at them.
Like they do in most parts of the world.
Right, extrapolate from them morals and ideals that we should live by. And then there are the Westboro Baptist Church people who believe that, you know, if women cut their hair, they should be stoned to death. And so Scalia was that guy with the Constitution. He believed that the literal letter of the law, the words of the Constitution, should be interpreted literally. They should be interpreted originally how they were written and not extrapolated for modern society, which is really interesting because of things that we have mentioned, like women didn't have the right to vote, black people were 3/5 of the law, not to mention immigrants wasn't a thing.
No, because the nation was immigrants.
Right. So
they were all immigrants.
So
in Britain, most of them.
Yeah, except we were all immigrants, minus the native population who were not citizens and, got that status.
Not.
So, so part of, I think, why people like us so vehemently disagree with Scalia's decisions are because he bases those decisions on this originalist view of the Constitution.
Except those times when he doesn't, because it suits
his
partisan purposes.
Drug law. There was a marijuana law that we can talk about later that was really hilarious.
And the 14th Amendment protection for same-sex marriage, but all of a sudden now it's about morality or whatever.
Yep.
So. Yeah, he was most of the time an originalist.
Most of the time.
It didn't suit him.
He's better than Alito, at least in his consistency, but there's some really glaring examples. And I'm not going to get too in the weeds because I really need massive amounts of resources and notes to talk about his long and extraordinary career in the court. But just as kind of a basis so that when you hear in the news kind of what this guy was about, that's what they're talking about, is if you think about it as though, like, you know, you're sort of like, I go to church on Sundays, aunt who's an evangelical versus Westboro Baptist Church Christians.
Yeah.
And you think about constitutionalists the same way.
Well, most quote evangelicals, you know, they just take the part out of Leviticus about the gays and, you know, they ignore the rest about shellfish and
pigskins,
crippled people not being able to
stoning
to
women who aren't virgins on their wedding nights. So Scalia was one of those guys that really looked at the Constitution and thought it should be interpreted by exactly what they said and nothing more.
Right.
Okay, so getting that out of the way.
Now what the hell happens?
Now what the hell happens? This is not a resignation. This is not something anyone saw coming. So it does a lot of things to both the court and I think the upcoming electoral season and also the political process in general. So
let's back up. Let's back up all the way to our listeners who know nothing about how this works.
Okay, good call.
So what happens now? How do you get a new Supreme Court justice? Well, he is nominated by the president, and then he needs to be confirmed.
Yeah, it's called consent and confirm. So the Senate, the way Scalia would have interpreted it, is that the president would nominate someone, and the Senate would see the nomination, see if the person is qualified or not, and then consent to that nomination and confirm that person as Supreme Court Justice.
Right.
Obviously, that's not how we do it now. It's become very politicized, very polarized. But that's the basic process of how it works. Okay? So think about the fact that we're in an election year. Barack Obama is not going to be the president after January 20th of next year. For all intents and purposes, what we call a lame duck year, right? He is in an election year and he has no reelection possibility because he's term limited.
Right.
So
even though your uncle might be sending you emails that say he's going to approve himself dictator or run for a third term and change the Constitution.
Right. So essentially he has very little political power because he's not beholden to the voters and Congress isn't beholden to him because there's no possibility of him becoming president next term.
No, just the Democrats who are going to, you know, I mean, yeah, whatever.
Right. So it's hard for him to get much done.
Right.
The way that the court is currently structured is that there's basically four liberals – Four conservatives
and a swing vote.
And which
a swinger.
Is Anthony, a swinger.
Oh, well, I don't know if he's a swinger, but he's a swing vote.
Swing vote. Anthony Kennedy. Anthony Kennedy was
good
appointed
Catholic.
By...
He's probably not a swinger.
No, I bet not. Anthony Kennedy was appointed by George Bush Sr. And George Bush Sr. really thought he would be this really conservative guy.
Thought it would overturn Roe, all
yeah,
kinds of stuff.
And he has very much disappointed the conservative wing of politics.
Which happens, too. There was Souter, where they also thought was going to be a big conservative.
Also, Sandra Day O'Connor.
Yeah.
All of these people are swing voters, of course, but they... Swing votes, I should say, not voters.
Well, this was also back in the day that somebody who was qualified would get confirmed,
yeah.
And you just hoped... That
yes.
they would, if you were president, you'd hope they'd go the way you wanted to
And
go.
Back in the day, it seemed really, there was a sense of impropriety from asking them, you know, what your political leanings were.
Right,
because the court
tests.
Was sort of viewed as this institution of
that was above
nonpartisan
all that. Right.
Politics. So the reason, just to back up a little bit, the reason that the Supreme Court is really different from all other branches of government is that two things. One, it's a nominated position.
Yeah.
Two, it's a lifetime position.
Yeah.
And the reason for that, which people get crazy about, but let me explain for just a sec if you don't know, the reason that Supreme Court justices have a lifetime appointment is because they want to prevent the justices from having to worry about the sort of sway of political thought
yeah,
or
anything
else.
Twist in the wind with their, the current
yeah,
politics.
Their job is to
interpret
the Constitution.
And the laws of the land, yeah.
And whatever case comes before them should be interpreted based on the Constitution and the law and not about politics, whether it's current or it's the fad or it's unpopular.
Now, that's not 100% realistic. And
no.
Politics always seeps in.
It does.
But for the most part, the whole idea of nominating a Supreme Court justice
yeah.
should be that. Now, those days are over.
Yeah.
And they're nobody's even really anybody running for president, at least on both sides.
Yes.
It has given up on even pretending that that is something that they value or care about. It's litmus tests all the way. And if you saw tonight, I mean, they just made it blatantly
100%
clear. Like, no, we have to appoint a guy who's going to do this, 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 and that. So it's completely partisan.
And not to get too insider about this, but the court would be offended by this conversation, the current makeup. Really, any justice would, because they really do view themselves as people outside of the political process.
Yeah.
They really do view, and I think that even Scalia, even Thomas, even the people that Alito that I really despise on the court take their job very seriously.
Well,
so sometimes,
Thomas,
well, I mean, come on.
I'll grant you Alito and Scalia and Roberts.
Thomas, I don't know. Want to talk about, but. But so sometimes what they'll do, rather than stepping in the middle of something that's a really big public controversy, is they will kick the can down the road.
Right.
The Supreme Court, when people bring cases to the court, they have this sort of discretion on whether or not they're going to hear particular cases. And there's certain legal reasons why they won't. And then there's just a certain level of discretion. And sometimes they'll say... In more legalese than this, look, public opinion hasn't decided this yet, so we're not stepping in the middle of it.
Right.
Now, that is not a constitutional law thing to say.
Absolutely
but it
not.
But it has happened, especially in the last, 20, 30 years.
But it does, ironically, it gives them cover from becoming part of that.
Yes. Or they'll, they'll initially hear it and they'll say, well, it's moot. It's no longer this or that. And
right,
I can
like
get into the legalese
Act.
Of it. And we're going to bring on a special guest to talk about the court, and we'll get into some of that. And she'll explain it in a way that will make you feel like you know everything because she's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, so it is supposed to be a non-politicized branch of government. Of course, it has become highly politicized, but that's the intent. So in an election season, okay, so let me just start here first. Right now, the Supreme Court is in the middle of their... What do you call it?
Deliberations?
No.
Decisions.
So the Supreme Court is in session from October to June.
Right.
Right now they're in recess.
They've heard the cases.
But they've heard
the
first half of their cases.
Right.
Second half start in March. For those cases in which Scalia was present and heard arguments, but for which they have not yet publicly announced the decisions... If they haven't yet announced what his decision was, then his vote doesn't count.
Right.
So if it was a 5-4, let's say it's 5-4, and Scalia was the fifth vote on the conservative side.
Mm-hmm.
If it becomes 4-4, because they can't count his vote anymore because he's died and they haven't released the official opinion.
Yeah, then what actually happens is Roberts and Ginsburg arm wrestle, which I thought was really
Ginsburg,
not
by
really
the way,
fair.
Works out constantly.
That's true.
She might probably kick
okay,
his
no,
ass.
Okay, no, but seriously.
Okay. So if it's a tie, essentially what happens is they kick it down to the lower court, which means a district court, the court that heard the rule, that heard the case before it got kicked up to the Supreme Court.
Well, they don't relitigate it. That last decision stands.
The decision that was made at the lower court before it got kicked up to the Supreme Court stands. Now, there is no precedent. They don't say the Supreme Court decided the lower court stands based on blah. They basically, how it was explained earlier to me was,
It's like it never got to the Supreme Court. Right.
So it's very easily retried.
Right. But once there are 9 Supreme Court justices.
Right.
So this is why there's an odd number.
Right. In the meantime, whatever the lower court ruling was will stand, and that will be the law of the land until it gets retried. So in cases where we lose, that's bad for us for the next year and a half.
Well, give us a for instance of one that has just recently been heard.
So there was a case everybody knows about, the case of the Texas abortion clinics.
Right.
Right? So there's this law about how they're going to restrict abortion rights under the guise of making all clinics or doctor's offices that perform abortions have admission rights to hospitals.
Right.
And be within a certain mile distance of a hospital.
Right.
And a bunch of other very arbitrary rules about
under the
clinics,
BS guise of
protecting
women, which is bunk because there's clinics all over the country that do all kinds of very complicated procedures. You don't see plastic surgery clinics
Having admitting rights and being within a certain
and they're
mile
cutting
range.
People open like crazy.
Exactly.
So
this is not about protecting women. This is about restricting abortion.
Yeah,
and it's really particularly effective in Texas because the state is so vast.
Yes.
It's a giant state.
So this law is effectively cut off almost all of West Texas, ironically where Scalia passed away, from having any abortion clinics open whatsoever.
Right. So essentially, the goal is to make abortion clinics so spread out and sparse that it ostensibly makes abortion
impossible to get in Texas. And the goal is eventually shut down the bigger ones where that could still happen, like in Houston and San Antonio.
Right.
Yeah. They want to de facto outlaw abortion.
Right. They're not outlawing abortion. They're saying, sure, you can get one if you're at this specific place and time, or if you can drive. And we're not talking about Rhode Island. We're talking about Texas.
Yeah.
Which takes God knows how many hours to drive across.
Nine
hours.
So, wait a minute. No. From Houston, more like 12.
Right. So if you're somewhere in West Texas and you have to go to an abortion clinic that's 8 hours away and you work, and you have to get there the day before, and you can't leave until a day after.
Good
you're
luck.
Talking about driving for 18 hours, probably having someone come with you, and you're taking 5 days off work.
And in West Texas, of course, you're talking about a lot of you know, Latino women
and teenage
women of
white
color,
girls
Native American. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. You know,
yeah, people in poverty. So anyway, that's kind of what's up for grabs right now. Texas passed a law that was this. It got blocked, it went to a couple of different courts through the appellate process, ended up in this district court in Texas. This district court said that Texas had the authority to enforce this law. Now, what that means is that law currently is enforceable. So there would only be a few abortion clinics in Texas.
Well, the Supreme Court put a stay on it while they're hearing it.
Right.
Right.
So if the Supreme Court, which they've already heard it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yes, they have.
Okay.
And their ruling is due in June.
Okay. So if it was 5-4 and somehow Scalia...
Well, let's give the most likely scenario,
The
right?
most likely scenario
and
is
again,
that it's 5-4, and Scalia was one of the four, and it'll be 5-3.
And so it's fine.
So it's going to be fine.
It
but
passes.
Let's imagine that was not the case.
Right.
And it became 4-4 for some reason, because maybe Kennedy switched over it.
Yeah,
became 5-4
right.
against...
against, or,
right.
or for the new Texas laws.
Sort of upholding the lower court's law
right.
that said that Texas was fine to do this.
Right.
If it came down to 4-4, what would happen is they would jump back to that district court in Texas who said it was totally fine for Texas to do this, And that would become the law of the land until it was retried in the Supreme Court in a year and a half, 2 years.
Right, right.
So in the meantime, Texas would be in a place where there would be 2, 3, 4 abortion clinics in a state that's larger than 17
you know,
states put together.
That case is kind of unique because I don't know if that stay they originally put on would be upheld or whatever. But
well, what happened is the Texas District Court said Texas has the right and is completely under the law allowed to enforce this law. So that law would go into effect and all the abortion clinics would be shut down.
Yeah.
Until the Supreme Court could hear it again. The injunction would not stand.
The injunction would not stand. Okay. So that would be really bad. Now, fortunately, it looks like everybody was thinking that would probably end up 5-4 at best in favor of striking down that law.
Yes.
So without Scalia now, it'll probably be 5-3.
Yes.
But we'll see.
Right. Okay. So there's a bunch of cases like that. And again, we're going to get more in depth on this. I'm hoping to get our Supreme Court expert to come on and talk to us about not only the ramifications of Scalia's death, but also what's going on in the future and some of the specifics about cases. Yeah. But just as a general note, you know, there's a lot of stuff up for grabs right now. There's abortion, affirmative action, gun control, birth control. There's an HHS and Hobby Lobby thing about nonprofit organizations having to give out birth control.
Which might end up 4-4 now.
Which may end up 4-4 now, which would go back to the district court, and then it would be Hobby Lobby all over. I mean, a lot.
So this is why this is really, really important in terms of the presidential election.
Yes.
Because there's probably going to be at least a couple 4-4s, and when they're relitigated – when they're brought back to the Supreme Court, who's going to be the deciding factor? Whoever the next president, assuming they could ever confirm somebody into the Senate, into the Supreme Court, I guess they'd have to do it via recess or something. And we'll get to recess in a second. But this is why it's a big effing deal. If it's President Clinton or Sanders, it's going to be someone, hopefully, along the lines of a Ginsburg, at worst, along the lines of a Kennedy, right?
Yes.
A swing voter. A swing judge, a Breyer, somebody reasonable.
Yeah.
If it's a Cruz or a Rubio, Trump's a wild card. I have no idea. But if it's a Cruz or a Rubio or even a Kasich, Mr. Nice Guy, or a Bush, they're going to try to get as close to another Scalia as possible. Now, they're not going to get another Scalia. Look, love him or hate him, he was a heavyweight.
Yes.
He was a talented, very talented litigator.
Very talented jurist.
And an intellectual. And yes. I don't think, you know.
He was wrong, but.
Alito is no Scalia, in other words. In fact, Alito is just kind of like the parrot on his shoulder. I wonder if Alito even holds up now.
He's
without Scalia
melt down.
Holding his leash.
Yep.
But, they're going to get probably another Alito, who's just going to vote, you know, right wing, straight, whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever the party wants. Or at least they'll hope. They might get fooled again, pick another suitor. Who knows?
And you know, you and I have been yelling and screaming about the Supreme Court. Even the other day with Arliss Bunning, we were talking about this should be the second most important thing to everyone.
Absolutely.
And everyone's been kind of blowing smoke up my skirt with this, like, everyone freaks out about the Supreme Court. You don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, we don't know. And now, before the election even happened, we're looking at a new appointee, a new nominee. So we were not just screaming and yelling for nothing. This is the most important.
Well, now it's on everybody's radar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but and it's not just Scalia. So the people are thinking, oh, this is, you know, not to be ghoulish about a guy dying, but like, oh, this is great news. Well, I mean, there's, you know, Ginsburg can't do this forever. Kennedy's old.
Yes.
Breyer's old.
Yes.
You could have as many as 4 new appointees that this next president
gets to have. And it will fundamentally change the fabric of our country one way or the other.
Absolutely.
Period.
Absolutely.
Period. So, okay, the other thing is whether or not Obama is going to get to appoint this next person.
You want me to give the short answer?
No. Is the short answer.
Oh, no, you don't want me to answer? Or no is the answer?
No
or
is
both.
The answer. No is the answer.
No is the answer.
He's going to try. He's going to put someone up.
Yeah, he already said he would tonight.
A pundit earlier, well, it's not a pundit, it's Jeffrey Toobin from, he wrote The Nine. He's a Supreme Court junkie.
He's obnoxious, but yeah.
Yeah.
He has some good opinions sometimes.
I'd love to hear the NPR lady, not Cookie Roberts, but the other one, what's her name? Nina Totenberg. Mm-hmm. I'd love to hear her opinion on this. And obviously it's late.
She'll have one tomorrow.
Saturday. So I'll hear her on Monday. But
Monday.
He floated a guy that Obama tried to get into a district court. I think it was District Court 4. Out of which Roberts, Ginsburg, and 2 others came out of this district court.
Yeah.
His name is Sri... Srivantan, something I can't pronounce.
Like an Indian.
Yeah, name. Sounds like an Indian name to me, maybe Pakistani. Anyway, he was a really hard-fought appointment to this district court, largely because this district court is seen as, or I think you quoted it as, a theater, like a waiting seat.
Minor leagues.
Yeah, for the Supreme Court. So that's where people pick them from. So Jeffrey Toobin thinks it's going to come from there and probably be that guy. For me, I don't think it matters. I think because the election is so close and because this is such an important thing, no one's going to get
They're so obstructionist nominated. Anyway. There's open seats at district courts and circuit courts everywhere.
Everywhere,
That the Republican Congress just won't, even if they're qualified.
Correct.
They're just not confirming anybody, Correct. Let alone a Supreme Court justice.
Which is the other interesting thing because he started appointing recess appointments.
Yeah.
Which means when Congress is not in session, when they're in recess, when they're back at home or they're on vacation or whatever.
The president
they are,
has the constitutional authority
to appoint someone during that recess without congressional oversight.
Now, historically, presidents don't like doing this.
Correct.
But when your Congress is so obstructionist, you literally can't get seats filled and the wheels of justice are grinding to a halt because there aren't enough justices to hear cases and keep the law of the land moving forward, then you have no choice but to do this. And then, of course, they call him an imperial president who hates Congress.
But the really important thing about that is he made a recess appointment to one of, not a judge, but to one of his cabinets, I guess, or something.
Cabinet post, yeah.
And, well, cabinets don't have to be appointed or consent.
No, you're right. It wasn't
so
a cabinet post.
So it had
post.
To have been something else.
Something else.
But
right.
it was something that had to have
congressional approval.
Yeah.
He had to be confirmed.
And
he or she.
The congressional Republicans took it to the Supreme Court, and he lost.
Mm-hmm.
So now recess appointments are in this sort of weird limbo.
Yeah.
This person wasn't a judge, but recess appointments were recently sort of struck down in this particular case.
This will be a very
this is being an overreach of his recess appointment.
So
capacity.
This would be a very weird meta thing if he tried to recess appoint a Supreme Court, and then it went to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
And it was 4-4.
Don't they have to recuse themselves?
Like,
I mean, I don't even know.
I don't even know.
So he's not going to do that.
No.
He's going to try. He's going to go through the process. He's going to make the Democrats look good.
He's going to try to get someone seen as moderate and even-handed, probably.
Yes.
And then make the Republicans look bad for stonewalling him.
Yes.
Which they're already got their message crafted out that, oh, we're so close to a new election. Let's let the people decide. And that's a very galling thing to say when the people decided on this president twice by huge margins.
Yes.
And
the whole point
right
is the people are not supposed to decide who the Supreme Court judges are.
Right.
That's the whole point.
Exactly. So when McConnell said that, it's just a forehead slapper of crap.
Yes. So, but it's a really, really big deal. That's what we're saying. When we read this news earlier today, Dana and Travis and I all went, what
I think
just happened?
I think everybody did.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really big deal. It has impact on a lot of cases that have been heard, a lot that are going to be heard.
Mm-hmm.
It has impact on the election in a way
impact.
That you know, Travis and I and Dana have been screaming and yelling about the court and during the election cycle. It's now going to be not just us yelling and screaming, but you're going to hear this be brought into electoral politics.
Yeah, it should. Well, I mean, it was always kind of there, and it always comes up sort of when you get later in the election process, and it was going to come up regardless with up to three justices retiring, but now it's like on the forefront of everybody's radar. If it gets
Scalia,
lost in the news
cycles, who's the most
cycles,
conservative person, died.
Yeah.
Now we have a vacancy of the most conservative person. I mean, arguably, Thomas may be more, but arguably.
But Thomas is no Scalia.
It's going to be in the news, and every candidate's going to have to answer for the court, and it's going to become something that people talk a lot about.
And I would rather have the Republicans talking about litmus tests and the folks on our side say we're going to pick the most qualified jurist instead of talking about litmus tests, but they're both doing it.
Yeah, and Bernie just said, like, I would never appoint someone to the Supreme Court who did not support overturning Citizens United.
Yeah, which, I want to fist pump to that, but also that's against sort of the nature of what
Correct.
The Supreme Court should be.
Yes.
Now, obviously, it's just preferable to Ted Cruz saying, I'm gonna appoint people that are going to overturn Roe v. Wade. It's
just
a million times worse. And committing that foul as well.
Exactly.
So it's like, it's doubly crap.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Yeah. And maybe, I don't know, maybe Clinton sees an opening and has a more moderate stance as far as that goes going forward. But I doubt it.
I don't know if that helps during the primary.
No, you're right. It doesn't.
No.
And that's just not what people do anymore.
Right.
It's completely partisan now.
Yes.
So, all right. Quick. What happened? Antonin Scalia, the most conservative Supreme Court justice, died. President Obama will nominate somebody to fill that position before his term is up. they will get completely stonewalled by
the
Senate.
That person will not be confirmed.
There's no way they'll be confirmed.
And the next president of the United States will have the job of appointing the 5 of 5 to 4 vote in the Supreme Court.
Right. And if it's assuming we don't completely turn over Congress and it's a Democratic president, then it'll be a fight to death no matter who they nominate. And yep. Anybody that's, you know, to the left of Heinrich Himmler will, you know, they'll try to stonewall it. And
if
we have a
Republican president, we will get another Scalia and we will have more Citizens United.
Well, we'll probably get another Alito.
Yeah.
Or yeah.
But we're not going to get anything good.
So
vote.
No, there's not going to be anything good.
Vote. Scalia died. Now you have to vote. Sorry.
Yeah, if you weren't,
it's done.
If you weren't go-to
sorry,
before.
Done. You have to now.
So I know that, you know, we're not experts on this subject, but that's sort of the skinny of it. If you want to know, because you're reading all over Twitter, the Scalia guy died. What the hell does it mean? Well, this is what it means.
Yep.
Okay, so we're going to take a quick break, and we are going to talk about the debate that we saw tonight. That was at the, if nothing else, entertaining for us.
Yeah,
Rince
yeah,
Priebus probably
finally.
Not so much.
No,
he's probably out on a ledge somewhere being talked off of it. But
again,
yeah, this time for real.
Yeah.
So just hang in, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Irreverent Testimony. So we talked about Scalia passing away, what that means for the Supreme Court in the future, and I'm sure we answered your questions and worries and queries and concerns intelligently, and I'm sure you have absolutely no questions whatsoever now.
No, we answered everything perfectly.
We were so thorough about it. But we gave you the basics at least, and you know, we're going to have a whole Supreme Court episode or two coming up with real experts, and we'll get much more into depth and also have people talking who know a lot more about this than we do. But
yeah,
we watched the GOP debate.
It
was in Greenville, South Carolina, where
Greenville,
where I once played a gig with my old band in a converted dentist office that turned into a music venue. True story. And yeah, 6 left. Carson, Cruz, Bush,
Kasich.
Trump, Kasich, Rubio.
Yep.
Did I forget anybody?
I don't think
Who
so.
Who cares? Yep. So it was clear that the strategy, at least this strategy came to light based on how the debate was going, that they wanted to get Trump to melt down the other candidates.
Yeah.
Wanted to get Trump to nuclear meltdown, and he did.
A little bit.
Well, he did a lot. But based on what we've seen, is that going to hurt Trump? I don't know. Conventional wisdom would say, yeah, this finally is going to make him unravel a little bit in the eyes of GOP voters. But I don't know.
I mean, I kind of loved him in this debate.
Well, for entertainment purposes, I mean, really.
It was amazing.
I mean, he upped the bullying on Jeb part. He pointed his finger at Ted Cruz and yelled liar at him, literally.
And, like, some of the talking points were straight out of, like, 2008, 2012 Democratic talking points about the Iraq War. And, like, it was epic, you guys.
He shouted that George W. smacking Jeb, that George W. Bush lied about weapons of mass destruction to get us into the Iraq War.
Yeah. He literally said that out loud.
The leading GOP candidate said that.
Said he literally pointed at Jeb and said, your brother lied. And his administration lied because they said there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and there weren't. And we just looked at each other and went, what?
In a GOP debate, huh?
What?
Not just by some fringe candidate.
No, by
the summer before. Leader. Like, yeah. So yeah. That happened. He also said Planned Parenthood does wonderful things.
For women's health.
For women's health.
Yeah.
He said it.
Yeah.
And, you know, screaming that over Cruz.
Yeah.
And
oh, my God. There were so many fireworks. It was so good. Again, I don't have notes, so I can't go through point by point. But I will say some of my favorite interactions were, of course, Trump-Bush, right?
Yeah.
So Trump is a big old bully.
Mm-hmm.
And Bush looks like the weak little nerd kid in the playground.
Yeah.
And normally, the nerd kids in the playground, those are my people. So, like, I would feel bad for him and I would hate Trump, but I hate them both. So it was really fun to watch Trump. I mean, he's just such a brash, obnoxious bully.
He's just an asshole.
Oh, my God. Like,
plain and simple.
Just no filter, no politics.
Okay, all right,
just...
let's put it this way. The man just gives no fucks.
Right.
No fucks
no
at
fucks
all.
No fucks to be given. Zero.
Not a one.
Zero.
And this
fucks.
Is why he's so entertaining.
Yes.
Now, the fact that he's actually a major presidential candidate and
primary?
Is leading the pack in...
It
is surreal to me.
Oh, my God, yeah. It's completely bizarre.
But that's where we are, at least on the other side of the aisle.
Yeah.
There was another cat fight between Rubio and Cruz
mm-hmm.
about immigration.
Always.
Much like the last time.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, you know, Rubio... he's really trying to work on not being Rubiobot, but it's not going great for him, I would say.
He did better than last time, which isn't saying much.
But there's this one point where, like, he hasn't talked for, like, 10 minutes.
Right.
All these people are arguing, and they're bringing up, like, 17 different points, and the moderator looks at Rubio, and he's like, Rubio, would you like to respond? And he goes, on what? On poverty? Poverty's, like, 12 questions ago. And the moderator goes,
I guess, sure.
And then he goes... because I have something to say about poverty, and just reads a fucking stump speech.
Yeah,
Rubio about, like, I don't have anything to say about the nuanced stuff they were talking
about. Yeah, it was
I heard the word poverty, and I know when, it's like Clockwork Orange. Like, I hear poverty, and my brain and my mouth says things about poverty, regardless of the context.
It
was bizarre and wonderful to watch.
It's very, very obvious that anytime Rubio... chimes up and says something that it's just really, really well prepared and rehearsed. And early in the debate, it was happening to the point where he was talking so fast.
Yeah.
Like, it was the first thing was some foreign policy thing, and he just rattled off stuff left and right about, you know.
My brain is full of stuff about this. So I'm just going to get it all out as fast as I can.
Assad and ISIS and Syria and this and that and the other thing.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know, it was just flying out a million miles an hour.
As though it was a rehearsed, like, crammed
right. Now the,
final.
The media loves Rubio, so they're going to spin it that he had a much better night and he came back.
Yeah.
But it's hard for me to imagine that
it's
he helped,
like,
himself a
they
lot.
They made him memorize more things so that
he wouldn't repeat the one thing over and over.
He had to memorize like eight more things on each point so that he wouldn't get stuck in a cycle.
Yeah.
But it still seemed exactly the same way it was to me, at least before, which was very rehearsed, very memorized, and like the man has no heart. No
now, Trump said one more thing that really just stuck out as being wow. He said that in a Republican debate. How can that possibly be helpful? And I don't remember what it was now. It was calling George W. Bush a liar and lying about weapons of mass destruction.
Yep.
He was saying
Planned Parenthood does wonderful things for women.
What else? I mean, eminent domain again, but you know, nobody really cares about
nobody
that.
Cares.
I forgot what else it was, but it was something. It'll come to me.
Okay.
But Trump really melted down. He looked really angry, really flustered.
Yeah.
He was
like
screaming
he was
and
an
shouting
aneurysm
over
at one
everybody.
Point. I mean, he was like...
he was calling people liars left and right.
The orange face was turning red and there's like a vein in his head. And I'm like, this man is not long for
this
world.
He was super extra mean to Jeb.
Oh my God.
I mean, he just really melted down. I mean, he kind of does that in every debate. But he does sort of measured.
Yeah.
Tonight, he just completely, it was
mad.
Fukushima.
Well, and interestingly, I think the thing that threw him the most is he's used to these crowds of people who love him. And he's in this.
Well, not always. He's been in a few where he got some, he was roundly
like
booed tonight.
This was different, right?
Because it's Jeb country.
He's in a place with a whole bunch of people who are actively booing him. He didn't have any supporters there, and he kept pointing to the audience, and it was really weird because as an at-home viewer, we don't really understand the makeup of the audience, and we don't really give a shit.
No.
About the people who are present there in South Carolina,
well,
North
I can
Carolina, whatever.
I can give you
care.
some indication. I mean, I've read some blogs, mostly from Democrats, who have said they've tried to get into these debates and they can't. It's rich people, it's donors, that Trump is actually pretty much telling the truth.
Right, but it doesn't matter.
No.
You're not talking to a room full of people without cameras. You're talking to a national stage. I don't give a shit the 2,000 people in the room.
Right, right.
You're talking to a national audience of people, so it doesn't matter who's in the room. Don't address the people in the room, address the nation. And he was really hung up on, like, I don't have these people, and I'm self-funded, so I don't have donors here, and you're booing. And every time they'd boo him, he'd get this face. And then he'd, like, get really mad, and it was like, it was not measured at all. And he's not measured usually, but he was like...
No, tonight was really extra over the edge. And again, my gut tells me that this should hurt him. Like, people should finally see, like, this guy's not presidential material. He's a loose cannon. He's a jerk. And he's not even really conservative. Just because he talks tough about immigration, he's not really a conservative. Like, this is why it must be driving the establishment crazy that this guy's winning. Like, everything about that was typified tonight. But so far it's worked. So what's to say this didn't work just as well?
Right.
I don't know. I've given up trying to understand the psychology of the other side.
Right. I mean, I really have too. I don't know. There was a specific time when Ted Cruz was saying, you know, Donald Trump has long not been a conservative, and he has supported pro-choice campaigns, mm-hmm. and he's supported Democrats, and he's supported the Clintons, and he's supported this and that. And Trump just sort of cuts him off, and he's like, you're a liar, and that's not true, and, like, this man has lied about everything. And then he was like, you know, you lied about Ben Carson at the Iowa caucuses.
And now you're sending out these horrible robocalls, which is all true.
And you're saying that I'm dropping out of South Carolina, which I'm not doing, and you'll lie about anything, and you're just a... he's like, no wonder no one likes you, and no wonder you have zero endorsements from anyone who's ever known you or worked for you.
Which is also true.
Which is also true. I mean, he's not lying, right? Like,
Trump lies about a lot, but sometimes he nails it, too.
Yeah, exactly. He was in that mode tonight where he's just, like, not... He's just pissed.
He's not measured. He's just...
No, he's just pissed.
No, he lost his composure.
Yeah, he did, completely.
But with what Trump stands for and what makes him popular, I don't know that that hurts him.
No, I don't think it does at all. I mean,
certainly not with his core people.
No.
But if there's still people on the fence who could still change their mind...
I'm like, well, he's winning. I mean, maybe I'll look at him again, and then you go, that guy, no.
That guy's nuts.
But also, okay, so then tell me on that stage, if you're undecided, who makes any fucking sense?
Well,
Kasich?
Cruz at least sounded like a politician.
Oh, I just hate him, though.
Well,
really?
You do, but put yourself in the mind of a Republican South Carolina voter.
Yeah.
Right now. Who on that stage was most somebody I can deal with? I mean, the only flack that Cruz got with Trump calling him a liar, which you don't really care about if you're undecided, maybe, or whatever. Or
if you're not a Trump supporter,
you're not a Trump supporter.
Right.
You don't really care that Rubio brought up those other things, because I think it's more damaging, the counterpunch on Rubio, that he... was in the Gang of Eight that forwarded an immigration reform bill.
Right.
Well, Cruz kind of did too, but it's a little more weedy.
He's making it, yeah.
So I don't know. I don't really know, but my best guess is if you're undecided and you watch tonight, you saw a maniac. You saw Jeb getting beat up by the maniac, that's not very appealing.
Yep.
You saw Carson babble.
And oh my God, Carson.
Well, we'll get to him in a second. You saw Carson babble. You saw Kasich being Mr. Positive, Mr.
Nice
Moderate,
guy.
Mr. Nice
Mr.
Guy,
nice
which
guy.
That'll appeal to some moderate Republicans, but there's not many moderate Republicans in South Carolina.
Nope.
So what's left? Well, Cruz is saying all the things I want to hear. He hates Obamacare. He hates abortion. He loves Reagan and Rehnquist or Scalia. I mean, they all, you know, kiss Scalia's ass, obviously. But, you know, I don't know. I think he wins by default because everyone else looked like an absolute tool.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, it was a really interesting debate because, if you remember, so Christie's out. So... you know, Christy, Fiorina, Huckabee, Santorum, Paul, all done.
Right.
So the last six, right?
Yeah.
Are on the stage. There's only six?
That's it. Yeah. Gilmore dropped out.
Everybody else is out. So these are the last six.
Last six standing.
And I think that the dynamic between the six of them was, for me at least, markedly different without Chris Christie. I noticed that sort of pragmatic New Jersey straight talking thing. I noticed it being gone, and I thought that was interesting for me at least. I noticed him. I felt his absence there.
Hmm.
You did you?
Yeah, I guess, in a way. I mean, he does have it, whether you love him or hate him, he has a presence.
Well, and, you know, no other candidate has. The last debate, no one was going to call Rubio out on the robot, and Chris Christie was like, there it is. He says it again. There it is right there. He's saying it right now. Hear him? It's the thing. There it is again. That's the third time you guys are hearing this. Like, he's
not
that
like
sort
you
of,
had to, but.
But he's like that straight talking guy that's going to be like, I swear to God, you guys, he's just on like, his wires got crossed.
Well, then that's sort of Trump now, right? The straight talking guy. But in a.
But he's not smart enough to sort of.
Yeah, and it was very awkward with him trying to defend his profanity. And
oh my God, that was hilarious.
That
talk
was
about
weird.
That
what is there to say? I mean. The moderator said, you know, people really don't like all your profanity. And instead of saying, you know, F it,
fuck you.
Which I would have hoped he would have said, he was like, oh, well, I'll try not to anymore.
No. He said, I hear that. It's really easy for me to not use profanity. I will never use profanity again.
I will never
I
fucking
will never
curse.
Fucking curse ever fucking again, you fuckers. I'm not kidding, though. He literally said, I'm never going to curse again then. I just won't ever again on the campaign. It's really easy for me. It's not a big deal.
No problem.
Don't have a problem.
And nobody clapped or booed or anything.
They
just like, okay.
Uh-huh. That's definitely not going to happen. So next.
Who cares?
But it was a bizarre, like, campaign promise. I don't even know what.
Trump just came across as such an awful candidate tonight that if you were going to, let me put it this way. Let's say you didn't know anything. Let's say you were in hibernation for a year. You just came out of a coma.
Yeah.
And before anybody got in the race, and you tuned in and you're like, oh, okay, who's running for president? And you watch this, you must have thought, A, how the fuck did Donald Trump get on stage?
Yeah.
And B, God, he must be getting killed at the polls because he's an awful, terrible nightmare of a candidate.
Yeah.
And then you look and he's winning.
Yeah. And you're like, wait, what happened
what
to the world?
What is going on?
What happened to the world while I was asleep? Because what?
What is going on?
What?
So I don't know, and I'm not even going to pretend. I haven't even looked at much of the spin yet. I think Piers Morgan said he thought Trump won, but Piers Morgan is a lunatic himself.
Complete lunatic.
So
I'm with you. I feel like Cruz. I'm going to say Kasich too. I think, but I you know
but
I'm
what,
a liberal
but,
Democrat, so Kasich always seems to me the most,
most reasonable
one. So
well, what did we say about Kasich? I think what the moderator said, like you seem like a Democrat's. Best option if they were to vote for a Republican or something like
yeah.
that?
Yeah. So, yeah, he made that argument of like, you know, the working class white voter, I'm sorry, blue collar, he called them blue collar
Democrats would go for you.
But he said they're going to vote for us. And
well,
I was
Kasich
like,
said that.
Yeah. And I was like,
I'm trying to think of how the moderator put it. And we're seeing Bernie Sanders ads pop up now.
Yeah,
here
like
in Denver.
All over.
First, I haven't seen any yet.
Yeah, well, he's having a rally. He had one, I guess, today.
Today
in
and then
Denver.
Him and Hillary had a dinner here, mm-hmm. and no, we didn't mm-hmm. go because
I already saw money. Well, I already saw Bernie in
she already
Boulder
saw Bernie.
Too.
She saw the stump speech.
If you haven't seen the stump speech, oh my God, my brother, the one we're always talking about that we're trying to convert. If we get Josh, we get the country.
Yeah,
he was thinking of going to the Bernie thing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
He sort of has the opinion that, you know, doesn't Wall Street own everything? And gosh, this Bernie guy makes a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. That leads me to the worst answer of the night that just made me head slap was there was only one question about the 2008 financial meltdown that one of the moderators was this lady at the Wall Street Journal who just absolutely abhors the idea of fraudulent bankers being fined, let alone arrested.
Oh my God. Oh my God. This was so amazing. If you're going to talk about what I think you're going to talk about, this was incredible.
So she asked Ben Carson of all people. I don't know why you would ask Ben Carson this.
Oh my God.
But, you know, the people are talking. They've had to pay these record fines. I think it was the CEO of JP Morgan Chase or.
And people talk about
them being arrested.
Like, Bernie Sanders has been saying, why haven't these people been arrested?
Implying that what a terrible, horrible thing this is. And and so what would you do? What do you think about that, Ben Carson? And Carson just said, well, there's too much regulation. Regulation isn't the answer. When we get rid of regulation, the poor rise up.
He literally said at one point, he's like, you know, the problem is that we're just going after these people. And like, what we need to be doing is relaxing regulation. You know, when we think about there's just too much, you know, yeah, there's going to be a bad guy here and there. That doesn't mean we need regulation.
No.
That means we need less regulation.
Less regulation.
And we looked at each other
like
and I said
to
Travis,
markets.
Like, okay, there's too much crime. You know what we need? Less cops.
Less cops.
Less cops. I mean, let
the
criminals...
Yeah, sure, some criminals
out
there.
Why can't we just let criminals be criminals for a fuck's sake? It'll be so much easier than trying to make laws and arrest them and regulate them. Like, let's just let them loot and murder and rape. It's so much easier.
Remember when it was Carson and Trump at the top of the polls?
Oh, my God. I mean, it was literally... It was like I'm living in a different reality than I know how to... I don't know what that means.
So that's your stock Republican answer for how to deal with, you know, the financial crisis and the financial sector having too much power.
Just don't regulate them so much and there won't be as many crime then. If we have less laws, there'll be less crime.
And then the regulation is hurting the poor people, which I guess is he's because lumping in with the CEOs who committed financial fraud that led to the financial crisis, the housing crisis.
Good. I'd love to hear that explained somehow, something... I'd love to have him and Bernie debate.
Oh,
God.
Well, it's don't dwell on that fantasy because Carson is not long for this.
We should
campaign.
Just make like debate porn. It's not actually like pornographic, but just like faux Ben Carson and like Bernie. We'll just like do matchups of like what it would be like.
I could put
of like
together
fantasy
like that.
Things of like Carson and Sanders, and then like Clinton and Rubio, and like. You know, I just like I have the I want to see.
Well, we'll
it.
Get there. We're gonna get there. It's gonna be one of these guys, and God, I hope it's Trump.
Oh my God, me too.
Because
oh my God.
I don't know. I don't know what Trump will do. Trump might his face might literally melt like Raiders of the Lost Ark. I mean,
he was like.
He was ready to blow a gasket.
His eyes were bulging a little bit.
He wanted
like
to go
veins.
Like just deck Jeb in the
oh,
face.
Oh yeah, he was getting like you could just watch him sort of physically.
He was literally turning
himself.
Red.
Yeah,
he was
his
literally
orange
turning
was
red.
Turning red. Like orange alert was turning like red alert on his face. Like his spray tan was becoming a spray burn. It was like this guy is gonna. You need to go to a commercial before he decks fucking Jeb Bush in a hot second. It is happening. It was awesome.
Yeah. And then Jeb was getting pissed for Jeb. He was getting a little pissed off, too.
Oh, he got all defensive of his family. He's such a...
Mom's
oh,
boy.
My God. You know, I can take it, but don't talk about my family. I love my dad, and my ma'am is the greatest ma'am in the world. My pep-pep and my mama. Don't talk about them like that, you meanie. Like
it really
like,
did come across
it
like
did.
That.
I'm
it's
not
like,
being mean. Like
even if you watch this and you hate Trump, you're like, oh wow, this guy's a wuss. I can't vote
like,
for him.
Exactly. I don't love Trump. I don't love Jeb. But like, I couldn't get on Jeb's side on this. I'm like, oh come on, grow a pair. You're running for president,
yeah.
And you look like the nerd in the schoolyard, which is my people. I was the nerd in the schoolyard.
Sure.
But
I was
like,
for a little bit.
Even
too.
Then, I'm like, come on, dude. Come on. The nerd in the schoolyard did not run for class president.
Yeah.
You know?
There was a pretty good meltdown later between Cruz and Trump, and we know that Trump hates Cruz's guts and that Cruz is doing all kinds of dirty tricks in South Carolina.
Well, they were like buddy-buddy, best friend, BFF, butt buddies for a while.
Well, that was early in the campaign.
And
you
now,
knew that was going to end, sure.
You know, now that Cruz is doing so much better, even since Iowa.
And then Kasich gave great opportunities to him to jump in with that shit-eating grin and...
Yeah.
And well, bob his head a lot and say,
he just
see,
never said anything. And then they come back to him and basically be like, anyway, they just had that whole fight. Governor Kasich, do you have something to say? And he'd go, all right, guys. So, and he just looks like the adult. He just goes, anyway, now that the kids are done fighting, we should talk about real things. And he did, you know, he did make some moderate points and, you know.
But that's just it, though. You're thinking that he did really well. And yeah, in New Hampshire, where the Republicans are generally, there's some moderates among them. There's more moderates among them.
Yeah.
South Carolina, there's not a whole lot of moderate Republicans. I'm sorry.
I know. He did better in this House.
Well, oh yeah, which counts for absolutely nothing.
Maybe it's like negative points even.
I mean,
I like him, it's so unlikely that he'll win.
But again, this is Kasich on the stump. The real Kasich has got some serious problems.
Yeah, yes. Which you're doing a thing
and
about.
And then again, right? this Wall Street Journal witch lady was bitching about that he expanded Medicaid and isn't that a horrible thing?
Yep.
And since it's part of Obamacare, you're a horrible person and look at all the debt. And he's like, actually, no, we cut down on medical expenses by a ton.
Because of
and getting
expanding
people
Medicaid.
Out of jail and rehab saved a ton of money and
on
people actually got medical care.
And,
so
yeah,
shut up, you
exactly.
evil witch from the
yeah.
Wall Street
what
Journal.
What the fuck was her deal? God, she was awful in her eye makeup. I just wanted to slap it off her face.
Right.
Not to be...
Well,
just saying.
This is how it goes now, right? We had the Democratic debate where we had Susie Ham Sandwich, who's a conservative, whatever, and then this one we get another conservative. So it's like, yeah, that's just how it is.
Yeah, they just pick the most awful people. and they ask awful questions. Not that, to be honest, when we had the Democratic debate the other night, there were some truly horrific questions that were asked
from Gwen
to the
Eiffel,
candidates.
Yeah,
yeah. From both of them, really. Particularly the white lady. She drove me fucking crazy with her questions. But both of them asked some good and some truly horrific questions.
But we have this right-wing stooge now at every debate, Democrat or Republican, getting to spout their propaganda about how, you know, Medicaid expansion is terrible and don't you dare fine or jail fraudulent bankers who lead to financial crises. I mean, this is what we have now.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, that's...
I mean, it's so good
enough
for
of this
though.
Bullshit about the liberal media bias.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, where the F is it?
Yeah, exactly right.
Certainly is not on display at these debates.
They're not hitting them. If there was a liberal media bias, half the debate would have been about domestic issues. It would have been about reproductive rights.
Gay rights.
LGBT rights. It would have been about women. It would have been about equal pay. It would have been about a million things. Immigrants. It would have been about dreamers. It would have been
about... Well, there was some about dreamers, yeah. Which...
They did, but mm-hmm. that they didn't follow up when no one answered the goddamn questions.
No.
You know, there would have been hard-hitting questions about stuff that if the media had a liberal lean, the questions would have been different.
Absolutely, of course.
In both the Democratic and Republican debate.
Yeah, and you can complain, well, it's a Republican debate, what do you expect? No, it's not happening on the Democratic side either.
It's not happening anywhere.
Yeah, and then they bring in the sidekick stooge who's very, very, very conservative.
Yeah.
They never bring in...
somebody from...
Tom Hartman.
Yeah. Right? No, oh my God, the world
Sam
would
Cedar.
Melt down. Exactly.
Right?
The world would melt
Chris
down.
Hayes or somebody from The Nation or...
No.
Slate? No.
No.
No, it's the Wall Street Journal.
The Nation,
Wicked
the
Witch
National
the
Review.
I don't know what the Kathy Hamm was sandwich was from. I think she was just like
she's
a
National
blogger.
Review.
Oh, she was from National Review? Mm-hmm. Oh, gross.
Yep.
Yeah, so... I mean, enough with the liberal media bias horseshit, okay? Uh-huh. It's, no.
Nope.
So that was a shit show. And again, I can't tell you who won this debate, but I thought Trump lost in glorious fashion, which means nothing.
Yep.
Because, you know.
Because I liked him. Well, I was so entertained by him, and I loved his meltdown so much. Like, I'm like, he won
well, it
for
is
me. He won.
To me.
He won in my heart.
But this is why. Let me tell you two things. They always talk about that the ratings are so much better for the Republican debates, and this is why.
Well, yeah.
And they talk about how that the turnout, that Democrats are freaking out a little bit, that the turnout has been better.
Yeah.
In the primary and the caucuses so far for Republicans. Not by a ton, mind you, but by enough that it's significant. And I think it's the Trump factor.
Me too.
I think Trump is bringing people out that wouldn't have been involved otherwise.
The same way that Bernie Sanders is.
Well, more so even, I would think. Yeah.
I don't know. I think they're different reasons, but I think – and really different factions of people.
There's only so many 19-year-olds out there. And sure, they're all – a bunch of them are fired up and coming out for Bernie. But Trump is getting the 35 to 60-year-olds who are basically – they hate them all and they want a straight talker. And Trump's that guy. And if it's not Trump, I don't think so.
What about Bernie? If it's not Bernie, do those 19-year-olds that are all fired up vote?
A bunch of them don't.
I agree.
So.
I agree.
We'll see what happens. It could be Trump, Bernie, but.
I think it'll be Clinton.
Cruz, Rubio. I seriously have no idea what's going to happen on the other side.
Either.
I really don't.
I don't know what's going to happen on either side.
No, I don't.
I kind of always have some idea, and this year I just don't. I don't even know how I'm voting in like 2 weeks.
Yeah, you
so.
Get a sense, and that's true. We're getting close, so yeah. You better figure it out.
Wow, it's a caucus. You're all supposed to convince me. No, I'll figure it out, and I promise I'll disclose on the podcast how I voted because I don't find it shameful to vote for either of them.
Yeah.
So I'll disclose how it ends up. But.
Since it's not going to be a late night, you think we'll podcast or live stream after the caucus?
Oh yeah.
That night?
Oh, definitely.
Reconvene in Lakewood.
Oh yeah,
because I'll be right around the corner, but I'll just go straight afterwards.
Yeah, just come over and we'll.
You
do
guys
it.
Will probably still be coxing. I think the turnout will probably be higher where you are than where I. But I don't know. This is a densely populated
it
urban.
Is. Yeah.
So.
But yeah, we'll podcast after. Also, one of our members, Brenna, who we've talked about before, who is our Kansas member and is one of our fact checkers. canvassed for Bernie Sanders today in Kansas, and met one of his DC people.
Yeah.
I guess like a, I don't know, I'm
campaign manager, organizer, of some kind. Yeah.
Some kind of organizer from DC. And she may become a caucus captain. There's some news there. So we may have Brenna on the podcast in the next couple of days. And then after her caucus, which is March 5th, to see how like delegates happen and that kind of stuff as the caucus captain and kind of get the insider edge on that. So we will talk to Brenna soon. If you guys have questions or suggestions for topics or guests or hate mail or love mail or anything else.
Bribes.
Suggestions. Anything. Send it to irreverenttestimony@gmail.com. You can tweet us at irreverentduo, and you can find us on Facebook at Irreverent Testimony.
Yeah, go on Twitter and see my amusing live tweets from the debate tonight.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
Yeah.
You'll like it.
So that's about going to do it. We'll be back very soon, of course, whenever we feel like it. What are there, 27 debates next week?
We have a lot going on.
So yeah. We'll get back to you. As usual, I've been Travis.
I'm Rachel.
And stay tuned, stay active, stay involved, and buenos noches. Oh, yeah, one more thing about that.
Yeah?
Remember when Rubio was yelling at Cruz, was complaining about Rubio for doing a Spanish language spot about
something. My God, right?
And then Rubio says, "You don't even speak Spanish."
I don't know how what he would say. I don't know how he would know what I said on Univision. He doesn't even speak Spanish.
And so Cruz
starts yelling at him in Spanish.
You know.
Yeah.
También, ¿cómo estás? Muy bien, gracias. Or whatever.
I don't know
he said.
What he said. I don't speak Spanish. I speak French. No, he
just said, you know, I don't know. I forget what he said, but it was something very banal.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I don't think, Cruz, that's going to help you with South Carolina voters. They don't want to hear their candidate speaking Spanish.
Because English is the American language.
Yeah, in Florida, that's a thing. But in South Carolina, I don't know how that's going to play. I'll be interested to see if that gets brought up. Anyway, yeah, that's it for us. Stay tuned for action. Stay involved. And buenas noches. Desire. The party blessed me with its future.